thing. That's why it's
But I just
valuable.
realized, is Izzy the only person that does makeup for TV at the crib? Have I been selling you guys short?
You guys don't? I'm super shiny, man. If I don't do
Dominica,
makeup,
Dominica, you made up?
I tried when this first started, but it made me look worse.
Welcome to Highly Questionable, where Israel Gutierrez cares so much more about this, the Dominique Foxworth, than I do. Let's roll.
I mean, it shows, too. Look at all this shine I got.
How worried should the Nets be about all of their injuries?
All right, had a really good game yesterday with the Nets and the Heat. Bam Adebayo hit a shot late to win it at the buzzer. Izzy Gutierrez was there. And Kevin Durant took a knee to the thigh. I saw a thigh contusion. I was like, oh, I hope he didn't take a knee to the thigh. Because anybody that's had the knee to the thigh knows that is the worst. We don't know how long he's going to be out. James Harden is still out with the hamstring tear. There's no telling if Kyrie's going to come to work on any given day. And I think we learned something last year from the Clippers, which was the expectation that a team can hit the switch when that team has never won a championship is a little much to ask. And the Nets aren't going to have any other choice. Like, Kevin Durant has played 25 games this year. This is a team that we did not think could win a championship when it was just Durant and Kyrie. And clearly the Nets didn't think so either because they went and traded for James Harden. And now they don't have Kevin Durant. And I don't know how much you can count on them having Kevin Durant. It's going to be a lot to ask them to win the East, let alone win the championship, when they just haven't been able to play together.
Yeah, I think the Clippers thing is something that I've heard. And the only issue I have with that is this. The Clippers really needed that chemistry, right? I think with the Nets, what we said from the beginning was, even if they're not the most connected team, they might sort of break the rules and win a championship with just offense because those three guys are so good. With the Clippers, you couldn't say that. They needed to find that chemistry and they couldn't. But I do think that it's similar in that some years it's just not your year, right? You just look at it like, you know, the James Harden trade happened. They had to, you know, get used to him immediately. And then Kevin Durant misses 2 months with a hamstring injury. And the day before he comes back, James Harden hurts his hamstring. And now Harden's about to come back. And then KD clashes knees with Trevor Ariza, and it's right above the knee, and you don't know how long that's going to be. They're going to be very careful with him, obviously, the same way they were with the hamstring injury. There's only 15 games left. What does that mean? Maybe 10 games together, if that's possible? If they can sort of use that time and create a defensive system that works for them, then yeah, I would put them right there with Philly as the favorites to win the East. But right now, I don't know how they're going to play. I don't know who they're going to play, and I don't know how they're going to defend. And if Bam Adebayo showed you anything yesterday, individually, those guys can be defended. Maybe not Kevin Durant, who started out like a house on fire and probably would have gotten 100 points if he played the entire game. But the other guys on that team can be defended, and you can't just put it all on Kevin Durant to win you every single game going through the playoffs.
Well, the last question that you had there, can they put together some sort of defensive identity in 10 games? I can answer that for you, and I'm no NBA expert. No, they're not going to be able to do that, and I don't think they expect to. Like, I think they have leaned in by choice or just by circumstance to hoping that their offense is going to make the opposing defense somehow worse than their defense. That is their strategy. So, no, they shouldn't be concerned about the injuries that have happened up until this point from a defensive continuity standpoint, because I don't think that their defensive ceiling is ever what they were going to be banking on. But they should be concerned of the ongoing health that the players will have. So I think if the previous injuries in vacations, I guess, or time off that one particular player has taken from time to time, if that is an indication of what's going to happen in the playoffs, yes, I think it is too much to ask for them to put it all together, get lucky, and have all these guys healthy for the stretch run of the playoffs because of those past injuries. But no, I'm not at all worried about their defensive continuity because that was never the plan.
Look, we are basically saying that if they can win a championship this year, that it doesn't matter if they have a coach or not. And this is not to insult Steve Nash. I'm just saying they will basically be putting together a team that has not played together all year long right before the playoffs and then go win a championship. There ain't no plan to really get into action at that point. You're just saying our dudes are so good that we can beat anybody out there no matter what their plan happens to be. Like, that's what it's going to wind up taking for them to do this, because they got these three dudes who are great.
Right.
And have played like 45 seconds together all year long. I don't even know if they know how to get the best out of each other, other than we all real good.
Should we be paying more attention to Steph Curry?
All right, so before the season, I had made the point on my podcast and some other places that I was really curious to see what happened with the Warriors this year, because as great as Steph Curry had been, I wasn't sure he was a guy that raises the floor of a team as much as he's the guy that raises the ceiling for a team. Like, do you really just want to come down every time and have Steph Curry decide, I got to get buckets every time? Is that going to work? Apparently, the answer to that is hell yes, that is going to work. Like, it looks like that NCAA tournament now where he had nobody on the team with him and you always knew he was going to take the shot and you still could not stop Steph Curry from taking the shot. That's what the last week has been, and I'm not sure these dudes on the team with him now could play for Davidson back then. The dude has three games this week where he has made 10 three-pointers. So it's like, how high does Steph raise the floor of this team? Obviously high, because they're not good and they're coming around 500, and that is entirely because of him. But the particulars of the numbers this week, I don't even feel like I need to give those to you. Just know it basically looks like a dude who's in seventh grade playing against a bunch of third graders, except he can make shots from 30 feet. He has been unreal.
Yeah, I think that's the mind-blowing part to me, is that you think of someone who is dominant and can impose their will. You think of somebody who is big and imposing, but they can't stop him. It feels as if he is in control of these situations and can impose his will, not because he's too fast, not because he's too quick or too tall, but because he is always within range and he is always open. And that is a scary thing and an enjoyable thing to watch. But I do have to admit one thing. I've been ruined somewhat by this current iteration of the way we cover sports. Like, it's hard for me to get excited about a player who I don't believe is going to win the MVP or who I don't believe is on a legitimate championship team. Steph Curry is challenging that. It makes it so that I do want to tune in to Steph Curry's games. But I have to admit, I've been jaded by this, and I hate myself for it, because I still look at the standings and look at that roster and I'm like, but come playoff time, we're not going to see much of Steph. And I get a little down.
I'm with you there. I saw this graphic today on Instagram, and it was Steph. And it was his stat line from the Boston game. That's it. It didn't have a big L on there. He took the loss, right? And I think people are just sort of overlooking the fact that the Warriors are middling. They're, you know, a 500 team. And if they make the playoffs, they're probably going to have to do the play-in thing. And so I actually think Bo nailed it there in terms of the floor and ceiling thing. But I think the way he's doing that is the part that I was sort of fascinated by this season, right? Could he come in and be such an offensive force that it doesn't matter what he does on the other side? Now, we've had this discussion in the past, but normally his teammates were Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, a healthy Kevin Durant, and, you know, any five man, anybody else that can play defense Iguodala in the middle. Iguodala. That means Steph didn't have to defend, and you didn't really have to judge that part of his game. I think of players like Jimmy Butler and LeBron James, where you can get a couple steals that turn into pick six baskets, right? You can affect the game literally on the offensive end to turn the game around into for your team altogether, whether it be into points or whether it be just shutting the other team down. Steph can't do that. He can't contribute to that even if he turns into a, hey, ball hawking, I'm going to go try to get a bunch of steals. It's not going to work out for him. It's not going to work out for the team defense. So that's where I say, in terms of just having one player who's like a universe for your team and he'll be the reason you win and lose, I don't think Steph Curry can be that guy, because he's essentially an offensive player. He is probably the most exciting. Like, I don't think I've had more fun just watching, say, hey, when's this guy going to take a shot on a basketball court than Steph Curry? And he's probably my favorite player of this generation right now. But in terms of picking one guy to change a team, I don't think he's the guy. He definitely can lift the floor of a team, but not on both ends of the floor. So it kind of makes it a question mark to me.
Yeah, I think that is a fair point, right? I think there's something to that. And I came on TV to eat a small measure of crow, because I was just asking questions before. Warriors fans got all mad about this. But I want to read some names off for you right now. Kent Bazemore. He starts for them now. He's supposed to be over there. Yeah, yeah. That's what he's supposed to do. Right. He played 32 minutes against Boston. I don't even need to read the rest of these names. I'm just saying, all of that is correct, because he's not the guy that can just dominate and turn a game back around in that way. But what he is and has been this year, I ain't going to be the one to say nothing bad about it. Not now.
I agree, and I hate that I had to say what I said earlier about this, and I hate that I've become, partially because this is my job, that I'm thinking, like, why am I watching this game? What's the reason? Sometimes it's okay to do things just for fun. Every time that you go participate in something, it should not be to create a baby. Sometimes you can just do it because you like to do it.
I think this is,
and watch basketball games.
Why did you just try to say something else? That's
the
out. That's where we go out. That's where we go out. Sometimes you just do it for fun.
Up next on HQ.
Zion Williamson is quietly living up to all the hype. And how is that quiet? right? Like, he is as good as we thought that he would be, and nobody seems to be paying any attention to it. I bet he wouldn't be like that if he was playing for the Knicks. I bet we wouldn't be hearing about these ratings problems if he was playing for the Knicks.
Who should freak out more about Zion's comments? Pelicans fans or Knicks fans?
Hey, Knicks fans, welcome back, guys. Your team is over 500, and I promise you, the world is a better place when the Knicks are good, because Knicks fans are happy, and when Knicks fans get happy, they start overreacting. They can't ever be satisfied with what they got. They always think of the next step, and here is Zion Williamson like, oh, you want to get happy about something?
I'm glad you asked that, actually. I mean, New York is the mecca of basketball. I love playing. I love playing here. When I played here in college, and this is my first time playing here in the pros, and I mean, this atmosphere, you know, whether they're cheering for you, whether they're booing for you, it's amazing. Honestly, I think outside of New Orleans, obviously, I think this might be my favorite place to play outside of New Orleans. I can't even lie to you.
Yo, he looks so legitimately happy talking about playing with the Knicks. Now, don't get me wrong. He's going to be a Pelican for 7 years. Like, he will have a seven-year Pelican career, no less than that, because everybody signs the first contract extension, and then they all go to free agency after that. But do you remember how bummed out he was at the lottery? Remember how sad he looked there when the Knicks did not get the number one overall pick? This does sound like a dude who would legitimately like to play for the Knicks. I'm not saying it's going to happen anytime soon. I'm just saying, you guys have always wanted somebody to want to come to New York. That's the guy. Don't mess it up over the next few years.
I'd be freaked out if I was a Pelicans fan when he asks at the top of that, well, I'm glad, or he says at the top of that, well, I'm glad you asked that, actually. Why? Why do you want to talk about another team's arena and how badly you want to play there? Especially after you lost in overtime and your coach is going off on the team, so you know he went off on them inside the locker room, so why are you so happy? And so, yeah, I would be concerned about this. I don't know if, to me, you know, what's the best thing to make sort of the magic of New York Knicks or the Mecca go away is to have to play 41 home games there, right? So when you go once or twice a year, then, hey, it's a fun place to play. But playing there all the time and being mediocre, I think eventually, like, if these Knicks sort of settle down or don't make much of a playoff run, if they're not very good next year or the years to come, Zion might say, maybe I'll just take my one visit a year there. But yeah, I would definitely be concerned. He seems like a guy who wants to play on that stage or a stage, right? He was at Duke. That's a big stage. Had his 1 year, didn't really play out the way he wanted. And now here he is dominating in New Orleans, but it's not turning into really wins. And so, yeah, I'd be a little bit concerned. I think he might already have an eye for New York in the future.
Maybe Pelicans fans can feel some sort of comfort in the fact that Bomani laid it out pretty accurately how it normally works for players, that they stick around that first team because the money is too big to say no to. But we've also seen players grab a little bit more control and start to force their way here and force their way there. Zion's big smile doesn't seem like he's that type of guy, but you keep rubbing him the wrong way down there in New Orleans and maybe he becomes that guy. But the craziest thing about that is that you pointed out one part that was interesting to me is him saying, I'm glad you asked that question. But what jumped out to me was him saying whether they're rooting for you or against you. There is a global pandemic going on. There's nobody even there to give it the full Mecca aura. He just wanted to get there. Yeah. He made that up. He wasn't feeling nothing special about that experience. It was 35 people there cheering for him or cheering against him. He couldn't even hear them. He could make out specific sentences. But he's like, man, it feels great. Whether they're for you or against you, his only other experience was in college when you don't know whether they're for you or against you. So there is not any experience of being in this great basketball mecca for him to really point to. He just don't like it down there in New Orleans. He's trying to get out the boot. That's what it sounds like to me.
Yo, let me tell you something. You talk about this in the context of player empowerment. How about a little commissioner empowerment? I'm just saying, Zion Williamson is quietly living up to all the hype. And how is that quiet? Yeah. Right? Like, he is as good as we thought that he would be, and nobody seems to be paying any attention to it. I bet he wouldn't be like that if he was playing for the Knicks. I bet we wouldn't be hearing about these ratings problems if he was playing for the Knicks. Y'all might want to find a way to get him playing for the Knicks. I'll go to Madison Square Garden for that.
Do you question if this touchdown was luck or skill?
Now, we are going out to Villanova football, which you may not have known existed, but they have a guy in the Hall of Fame, Howie Long. Let's get a look. Daniel Smith. Here we go. They clearly spend more money on basketball uniforms. Here we go.
Whoa.
Touchdown.
Wow. What just happened there?
I'm sorry.
Just threw that thing up there. All right, do we think he did? Like, what level of this do we think he did on purpose? Because he got – I want you to look at the end of that where he puts his hand up. He didn't put his hands up like, oh, man, I can't believe that happened. He threw his hands up like, yeah, I told y'all.
All right, let's see. No, no. There was not a single wide-open player there that he was looking at. This was clearly desperation. This is all or nothing. What is this, fourth down? It's got to be fourth down or something, right? You just throw it up there.
Like, the crazy part about this whole clip is that was third down. It wasn't like a two-point play. It wasn't the last play of the game. They ended up losing the game. Like, I'm kind of hoping that it was all a mistake. Like, it slipped out of his hands, because otherwise that is a ridiculously dumb play that just turned out to work out for him.
Well, I was wondering if this spring football thing is like the college version of the XFL, and if they maybe get an extra point if they actually throw a touchdown without looking, because that's what I would pay to watch. If you can get like 8 points if you throw a no-look touchdown, pretty interesting plays there.
Who the hell is going to watch Villanova play football in April? Is that a fair question to ask?
I mean, I guess when else are you going to go watch Villanova play football? If it's September, you got a whole lot of options if you want to watch football. Right now, you want to watch football. Nova versus Delaware. That's all you got, baby.
Do you question if the Twins should let Williams Astudillo pitch more often?
Okay, so they say they call him La Tortuga. That's the what you call it, the turtle, right? That's what we have here. They say that he is a journeyman. What has been going on with him?
One of those guys who does not have to ice his shoulder after he pitches.
Wow.
This how you go. Always amazing to me.
Did that say 46?
Yeah. It's amazing to me that these guys don't swing at these slow pitches, because, you know, they can react to 100 plus. They're giving it to you half the speed. You got all the time in the world to react to these things. Just go ahead and swing.
Because they never do that. They're just not when's the last time they swung at a 46-mile-an-hour pitch?
You know, maybe the BP coaches need to, like, lob some up there sometimes, get you used to it, because clearly, like, Zach Greinke uses that bad boy every once in a while.
And he is throwing them lollipops up there, but I guess you're right, Bo. If you're not accustomed to seeing it, any sort of change-up, I guess
you got to be real nervous, right? Like, if you're under those circumstances, because what you don't want to do is swing and miss. the one thing that you do not want to do is whiff when this dude is out here throwing this stuff. But, hey, I give him credit for this. Learn the lesson of Jose Canseco. He wasn't going out there to throw out his arm in the name of being no fake pitcher.
This is actually La Tortuga's second career appearance. His ERA is now down to a career 22.5.
Okay, progress.
What did the first game look like?
Yo, you got to be real hard up for a hit to really be swinging when a cat like this is in the game. You know what I'm saying? Like, don't y'all want to go home? Don't you want to just hurry up and go take a shower? It's already reached the point where he's in the game.
Hey, that's the difference between you and professional athletes. I'd be looking at that like, man, it's time to get my picks up. It's time to get some turnovers. It's time to pad them stats. Tortuga's up. Oh, yeah, I'm saying this one out of the park. Nobody's going to count it up at the end of the year. The thing going to say 53 home runs. It's not going to say 52 in a Tortuga.
Tonight on ESPN Plus, Dodgers and Mariners.
All right, so the Dodgers and the Padres played this weekend. The Dodgers spend more money than God on their team, and the Padres are like, well, we are kind of named after Priest. Let's try to do the same thing. Had a little bit of a rivalry situation brewing over there. Let's go out to Mookie Betts. Let's see what's happening here with Mookie Betts. Two outs in the ninth. Mm. There's the catch.
Ooh, with two on, that saves the game right there.
Oh, that's nice.
That's incredible.
That's
somehow
nice.
Mookie Betts and La Tortuga play the same sport. I don't know. Even me as a football player, that is hard for me to understand how those two human beings can do the same thing for a living, but alas, that was incredibly athletic.
I want to know what they put on those jerseys so they don't grass stain. Like, I used to always wonder when I played Little League, I'd make sure to get my uniform dirty every game because that's what I felt like the big leaguers did, not realizing what I was doing to my poor mother in the course of that. There's no way in the world he shouldn't just have grass all over his jersey. They got something special in Major League Baseball.
All right, I'm going to go ahead and talk a little bit of baseball and not just nicknames and jerseys. that's actually fun. That series was fun. It's exactly what baseball needs. There's a rivalry going on between the Padres and the Dodgers. Not only are they located near each other, but it's fun because you've got the World Series chance and you've got these young up-and-comers. Fernando Tatis, no real shoulder scare. He's back in the lineup playing. That's really fun. That's what we want to see out of baseball. That's what's going to bring life to the sport again. That and, you know, condensing the season back to somewhere around like 80 games.
You know what would have made that catch better? If Mookie Betts had a nickname in Espanol. All right, that is our show. Izzy Gutierrez will be reading the Canterbury Tales in original version, I imagine. Dominic Foxworth, check him out on Foxworth Fridays on the right time with Almighty Jones. It's a podcast.